"Eh, Gan," said another, "if you've ate as much as I smell, you won't last the night." "Air and onion won't slow any man," retorted Gan, grinning. "Might just set off my opponent." Pox ignored them. It reminded her of drill in the company, the familiar mixture of joking and criticism. She finished her exercises and went to buckle on her sword. The barton was half full of men. She saw no other women, and they were all mature and well-muscled. Most had picked up one of the short clubs, four had pikes, and one had a sword of medium length. A bell rang, a single mellow stroke. Everyone stilled, and Marshal Sedfer came into the barton, followed by five other men. "Are you ready, yeoman of Gird?" he asked. "We are ready, Sir Marshal," they answered in unison. Pox was silent. "Then may Gird strengthen your arms and your hearts, and keep them strong for the safety of our land." "In the name of Saint Gird, protector of the innocent," came the response. "We have a guest here tonight," said the marshal, less formally. "Poxenarian, come forward. I want all our yeomen to know you." Pox edged past the others, to stand near the marshal under the torches. "Though she is not a Girdsman, Poxenarian is an experienced warrior. She has accepted my invitation to drill with us. Those of you who drill with swords will have a chance to cross blades with her if you wish. Now, bring your weapons and let me see." The marshal began to look over the weapons, commenting on their condition. He was as thorough as any of the Duke's armsmasters. Ambrose explained that some of the weapons belonged to the men, and the rest were stored in the Grange. Then the marshal began assigning drills, some to one-on-one, others to two-on-one, and others to more basic exercises. When they were all occupied, he led Pox to a corner of the barton where Ambrose waited with two short swords. "If you don't mind," said the marshal, "I'd like to work with these short swords. I suspect you are far more skilled with a short blade than I am. It would be best for the yeoman, I think, to learn the short. Of course, you'll want a chance to work with your own, but..."
"That's fine," said Pox. "But I haven't drilled with a short sword since leaving Arrhenius. I may be clumsy with it."
"Not as clumsy as I am," said the marshal. "I haven't been able to teach the men to fight in lines with it."
Pox unbuckled her long sword, racked it, and took one of the short ones from Ambrose. "We used a small shield with these, in formation," she said. "Do you have shields?"
"Yes, but we rarely practice with them. As I said, most of our men are not at all skilled with swords. Once they learn that, then we'll try adding the shields."
The marshal, too, had taken a short blade. He gestured at another man to come over. He looked closely at Pox.
"You aren't wearing your mail."
"No, I didn't think all of you would have mail." Pox wished she had a banda, but was not about to ask for one.
I always say the stripes you take in training reinforce the lesson."
The marshal looked pleased, and the other two grinned.
"Now, we'll warm up in pairs, then go two against two, is that all right?"
"Surely." Pox moved the sword around, feeling its balance. It felt subtly different from the one in the Duke's company. Lighter, she finally decided. As she had expected, the marshal was not nearly as inexperienced as he'd claimed. They tested each other's abilities and strokes, without either making a touch for a few minutes. Then the marshal gestured a pause.
"Yes, indeed," he said. "I see you have much to teach us. Now, Ambrose, you stand with her, and Mattis, you take my right."
Pox shot a look at the young man who came to stand beside her. She felt queer, standing in formation with a stranger against strangers. But if she joined a guard company somewhere, this is what it would be like. Again the blades came up in salute, and the drill began. Ambrose, she saw at once, wanted to move around too much. He shifted from side to side with each stroke, alternately crowding and leaving her flank uncovered. The marshal's partner, Mattis, looked as if he couldn't shift at all, but at least he kept some sort of line. Pox managed to cover Ambrose's lapses at first, but finally the marshal's blade leaped in and wrapped his side sharply. Pox had managed two touches on Mattis, but none on the marshal. He signaled another halt.
"I think I see our problem," he said. "Ambrose, you aren't holding your position. Isn't that it, Poxenarian?"
She was not sure how critical she could be without angering them.
"Well, yes, part of it. A line works only if it holds together. But I think those who learn a long blade first have more trouble. It seems to me that you, sir, and Ambrose both are trying strokes more suited to a long blade. more wrist and less elbow and shoulder.
Ah, I see. Suppose you stand out and watch us and give corrections.
The marshal lined up with Ambrose this time, and a nervous Mattis braced himself to meet both of them. Pox shook her head. No, sir, by your leave, let all of you line up and go slowly. Do you ever count the cadence for a slow drill? Yes? Good. If those of your men with the short clubs use much the same strokes, they can partner you, and the line can be long enough to work. I can anchor the center of the opposing line. The marshal agreed, and soon they had a line of four swords, for another man took up a blade, a little uncertainly, against Pox and three men with clubs. At first the drill was very ragged, but in a few strokes they all caught on, and Pox was able to talk them through it. You see, she said, as the blades met clubs with light taps, if you are in close formation, you'll hurt your partners if you shift too much, and leave yourself open as well. There is a rhythm and a trust that your partner will be there. Not so much turn to the side. Yes, and if you have a shield as well, you may foul your partner's blade if you turn. As practice went on, they grew used to the limited sideways movement, and Pox encouraged them to increase the tempo. After some minutes, the marshal called a halt.
Very good, he exclaimed. Very good indeed. Anything else?
I didn't notice it in the others, sir, said Pox. But you and Ambrose still seem to have too much flex in the wrist. You are trying to do more with a point than a short sword allows. It's the quick thrust you want, not fencing about. She expected him to be angry, but he was not.
So, each craft has its masters, and a knight's training ill suits an infantry soldier. I'll try to remember that. Perhaps you'll give us the benefit of your training again. And now, since you carry a long blade by choice, you should have the chance to practice with it if you will.
He handed Ambrose his short blade and gestured to Pox. She handed over the short sword and went to pick up her own blade. When she settled it to her satisfaction, the marshal had also armed himself and awaited her.
I suggest we go into the Grange itself, he said. The light is better.
Pox followed him in. So, she noticed, did many of the other men.
I don't suggest the platform, since you aren't used to it, but here.
His glance cleared a space in the crowd, and he drew. Now, said Pox, smiling, I expect you will have plenty to teach me.
The marshal grinned. I should hope so. You have some good strokes. I noticed that yesterday, but...
He moved to attack. For the next few minutes they circled first one way, then the other, blades ringing with stroke after stroke. Pox had to use everything she knew, and all her size, to keep from being pricked again and again. Sweat poured down her back and stung her eyes. The marshal met every thrust with a firm repulse, and she found herself more often defending than attacking. She found no weakness she could exploit, and wondered what old Siger would do against him. That thought almost made her laugh. She'd still back Siger against anyone, even a marshal of Gerd.
Very good, the marshal said finally, still hard at work. You certainly have a thorough grounding in long blades. I have a few tricks, but as far as plain fighting goes, you do very well.
Pox said nothing, needing all her concentration. Despite her best efforts, he made a touch the next moment, ripping her left sleeve from shoulder to elbow.
There now, he said. I have regained the respect of our yeoman. Would you rest a bit?
He stepped back, and Pox lowered her weapon.
I could stand to, she said ruefully, wiping her face. I see I still have a lot to learn, just as I thought.
The willing student learns quickly, he said. You need naught but experience to master this weapon as well as the other. Common swordsmen you could defeat now quite easily, I imagine.
Ah, but I like learning weaponcraft, said Pox. She thought of Sobbin's teasing with a pang. I always have.
Good then. You're welcome here any time. I'll be glad to drill with you. You're good enough to give me practice. Ambrose, too. And mind, he said briskly, fixing her with a sharp glance. Mind, I intend to have you a guardsman before long. Such skill as yours should be dedicated to a good cause. We need such fighters on the side of right, not running loose after idle gain.
Pox felt a flicker of anger at that, and her chin came up.
No, he stopped and rubbed his head. I shouldn't say that of you, when I don't know your allegiance, but Gerd knows we've trouble enough coming, and few to meet it.
He grinned at her suddenly.
I still think you'll make a fine guardsman some day, even a marshal. Who knows?
The others milled about, replacing weapons in racks on the Grange walls, and taking their leave. Pox sheathed her sword and turned to go. The marshal was talking seriously to two men, low-voiced. A hand touched her arm. It was Ambrose.
If you'd come again, I'd like to drill with you.
Oh, I'll come again while I'm here. It's good practice. But don't you have any women drilling with you?
Ambrose shook his head.
No, not at this level. We'd had some in the beginner's class. In fact, we have two there now, but those who want to go on, the marshal sends elsewhere for more training.
I see.
She wondered why, but felt it would be impolite to ask.
Were there many women in your company?
Maybe a quarter of us, one of the cohort captains.
I've heard of Duke Phelan. Isn't his title from the court of Saya?
Yes. He has lands in the north of the kingdom on the border.
Pox sighed.
I might be going back there.
But you left his company, didn't you? We thought you were a free sword.
Well, I was due leave, and the Duke thought perhaps I should try another company, another service, for a time. But I miss it. I've thought of going back.
Oh.
Pox could hear the unasked questions. Ambrose stopped at the door, started to say something and stopped, and finally said,
Well, Gerd go with you. We'll be glad to see you again.
It was late. Few torches burned along the lanes. Pox made her way down the dark streets with care, following some distance behind several others from the Grange. Cold night air, damp from the river, soothed her hot face. She caught a whiff from the tanners crossing the bridge. As she neared the crossroad, she saw light spilling from the inn's windows. She slipped in the door, ignoring the few who sat late in the common room, and went up the stairs to her own room. Her shoulder ached pleasantly. She pulled off her tunic and washed the sweat off, then remembered her unfinished dinner. She put on her other shirt and went back downstairs. Hebbenford rose from his place near the fire.
Do you want the rest of your dinner?
Yes, if it's not too much trouble. Pox settled at an empty table. Hebbenford brought a candle. A serving wench came with a tray. They had heated the leftovers by the kitchen fire, and the gravy was bubbling hot. She cut a slice of bread and began eating. Several of those who had been at the drill clustered at one table over mugs of ale, chatting. One caught her eye and grinned and waved. The man in black that Pox had seen the previous night sat across the room, a flagon of wine at his elbow. Two men in merchant's gowns diced idly nearby. One of them, looking around the room, saw her and nudged the other. They both rose and came to her table.
"I'm Gar Travenin," said the older, "a merchant, as you see, from Chea. Could we talk with you?"
Pox nodded. Her mouth was full. They sat across from her. Travenin was balding, with a gray fringe. The younger man was blonde.
"We hear you came over the mountains from Arrhenius."
Pox nodded again.
"I heard there was more fighting than usual down there, and no trade this year. Is that so?"
Pox took a sip of her ale. "Yes, that's so. Had you heard of Lord Siniava?" The man nodded. "Well, he tried open war against the Guild League cities and the northern mercenaries all at once. He lost."
"Ah, so. Do you think, then, that trade will be back to normal by next spring? I held off this year, but I've a caravan of fine wool that needs a buyer."
Pox thought back to the turmoil in Arrhenius. She spread her hands. "I can't say, sir, for certain. I came north with a late caravan, as far as the Silver Pass, but whether they made it safe to Valdaire, I don't know."
"Were you with a regular company?"
Travenin asked, as if he had heard already. "Yes, Duke Phelan's company. The Duke was much involved." Pox was not sure how much to say. The old habit of silence held her still.
And why did you leave?"
Pox felt irritated. It was none of his affair. "Why, sir, I enlisted for 2 years. My time was up."
"I see. You had no trouble?"
"Merchants," she thought disgustedly. "No honor at all." "No, sir. No trouble." She went on eating.
"I heard the Duke and Aliam Halveric were much in each other's pockets," said Travenin, his eyes roaming around the room.
Pox gave him a hard look and returned to her meal. "Oh, I couldn't say."
After some kind of trouble last year, over the pass. Some border fort, I forget the name.
She thought of Dwarf Watch at once, and said nothing. The smell of that mountain wind came to her, and her last sight of Sabin and Kana in the rain, and Captain Ferrault's dying face.
Do you know it?
The merchant persisted. Pox stopped eating, and slowly put both hands flat on the table. He glanced at her, and froze, as she glared at him.
Sir, she said finally, in a voice she hardly recognized, I have nothing to say about the Duke's company. Nothing. And by your leave, sir, I'll finish my supper in peace.
She stared at him until he reddened and pushed back his stool. She had lost her appetite. All those deaths, that grief and rage. The merchants she had traveled with had not been so crass. But of course, they had been in Arrhenius during the war. They knew. Her breathing slowed. She took another sip of ale. The merchants were back at their own table, heads together. The man in black was watching her. As he met her eyes, he lifted his glass in salute and grinned. She looked away. All at once, she wished she were anywhere but here. No, not anywhere, but back with the company, laughing with Vic and Arnie, talking with Stamel or Selly or Dev. Tears stung her eyes, and she blinked them back angrily. She drew a long breath and drank more ale. She had thought she'd feel at home in the north. She was northern. But Brewer's Bridge was far from home. Maybe that was it. She thought of Varela, thought of going straight on to Three Furs. She had money enough. She could make more show than even her cousin. She imagined her mother's smile, her father's scowl. But he might not be angry, with the dowry repaid. She wondered what she would tell them, and what they would ask. Her musings ended there. She could not tell them anything they would understand. They would see her as these folks did. Dangerous, wild, a stranger. She started to pour more ale, and found the tankard dry. She was still thirsty. She beckoned to Hebbenford, but when he came, she doubted the steadiness of her voice and asked for water. His expression approved that choice. The merchants left the room and went upstairs. Pox drank the water and thought of what she would do the next day. She needed new clothes, at least a new shirt, a saddle for Star. She knew where the tailor's shop was and the leather workers, if he made saddles. She would order a shirt or two and then think about how long to stay. Suddenly she remembered the tall man the smith had felled. How was he? She was unwilling to ask the innkeeper. She picked up the pastry from a dish she had pushed aside and bit into it absently. It had been a long day. Chapter 10. Next morning, she woke again at dawn. This time Hebbenford seemed to expect her when she padded down the stairs and out to the stable yard. There she stretched and twisted, working the stiffness out of her shoulder. When Sevri came out, they fed the horses together. Pox stopped to watch the black horse eat. She wondered what would happen to it if its master died. She imagined herself riding away on it, then wondered if she could even mount it. The tailor, she found after breakfast, was away on a trip.
Buying cloth up at the Count's fair, said his wife.
He's got a commission to make cloaks for the new council members, and has gone to buy cloth. He won't be home for a sennight or more. But what did you need, lady? Perhaps I could serve.
Well, some shirts, at least. I'd wanted a cloak, a heavy traveling cloak for winter.
Fur? I couldn't do fur, nor does he, without it being paid in advance.
No, not fur, just good warm wool, weatherproofed.
Plain shirts or fancy ones?
Pox thought of her money. Plain, maybe one fancy one.
The plain shirts I can do. And here's our silks, from the south. They say you've been there. You'll know these are good.
Pox looked at the goods. The silk slid across her hands like water. She decided on a silk shirt, green, with gold embroidery on the yoke. For that, the woman said, she'd have to await the tailor's return. In the meantime, a linen shirt, Pox explained the cut she wanted, to free her arms for swordplay. The tailor's wife took her measurements.
You're as big as a man, she said, a little nervously. Even in the neck.
Pox laughed. It comes of the fighting, she said. Wearing a helmet every day would thicken anyone's neck, makes it harder to cut through. But the woman didn't take the joke.
and only looked frightened. Pock sighed, and ordered trousers as well, of the local wool, thicker and softer than she'd found in Arrhenius. The tailor's wife knew someone who knitted for sale, and by noon, Pox had ordered new socks and gloves for the coming winter. As she came back to the inn, well satisfied with her morning's work, she noticed a crowd round the door. She slowed. A group of men came out, carrying something on a plank. Boots, scuffed and worn, poked out from under a blanket. The tall man. Pox shivered. Marshal Sedfer, walking with the carriers, nodded shortly to Pox as he led the group toward the Grange. Pox went on to the door, staring after them. Just inside the inn door, Hebbenford was talking to Master Oakhallow.
"Doesn't do the inn any good," he was saying, "and besides..."
"Oh, Poxenarian, Master Oakhallow was looking for you."
Poxenarian felt a tremor in her gut. The Quokkan was looking at her without expression. She opened her mouth to say something about lunch and thought better of it.
"For a simple warrior," said the Quokkan, "you certainly have managed to make a stir in our quiet village."
Hebbenford moved away, into the common room. Pox thought of several things to say, and decided against all of them.
"You were about to eat?"
Oakhallow went on. "Yes, sir." Pox tried to judge his expression, but if you needed...
"No. I think I'll join you for lunch, if that's acceptable."
Pox wondered what he would say if she said no. Instead, she nodded and followed him into the common room. He murmured something to Hebbenford, and the innkeeper waved them on into the kitchen. The serving wenches were wide-eyed. The Quokkan moved to a table at the kitchen window, overseeing the courtyard, and sat down. Pox hesitated, then sat opposite him. Hebbenford brought a platter of sliced meat, a loaf of bread, and a round of cheese to the table. One of the girls brought a pitcher of water and two mugs.
"You might as well know,"
the Quokkan began, as he pulled out a dagger and sliced the round of cheese,
"that you're causing a stir. I don't mean that dead bully, necessarily, though that's part of it. Not your fault. I agree with the marshal. But you were involved. Then Master Senneth, after you left his place, has had a... how shall I put it? A complacent look. And he called you lady, I hear. In his vocabulary, that means rich. Folk here know the Holveric Company, and most have heard of your duke. After your comments last night to the Chea merchants, no one has much doubt that he's still your lord. You gave both to me and to the Grange a jewel worth a knight's ransom, apparently without knowing their worth. You walked off with a horse that the smith claimed was an outlaw."
He paused to eat a slice of cheese. Pox was still staring at her food. She shook herself and speared a slice of meat. Put that way, it almost seemed that she'd tried to show off. She finished that slice and tore off a hunk of bread. She had no idea what was coming or what to do.
"Marshal Sedfer says,"
the Quokkan went on, after pouring himself some water,
"that you're uncommonly good with that sword, and also good with a short sword, which I'd expect where you've been, and also good at instructing in weapons. We didn't expect that of one so young, a mere private. Sevri tells me you're good with all the animals, and helpful as well. Fighters aren't, as a rule. In fact..."
Pox looked up, and was caught by his dark gaze.
"In fact, Poxenarian, Dorthan's daughter, you are very different from the usual ex-mercenary. Now, Quokkani..."
He gave a slow smile that changed his whole face.
"Quokkani have their own ways of learning things. From what I know, I judge that you're as honest as most youngsters are, and mean no harm, not that no harm comes of it. You have some secrets rankling in your heart which must come out, and soon, I judge, if they're not to hurt you later. But unless you choose to confide in me, it's not my business.
Pox thought of the snow cat with a mental wince and looked down.
Marshal Sedfer thinks you need only join the Grange to be a fine addition to our town. That's a compliment. He's hard to please. But you've come to the notice of our local guard and the council, and it's best you know the eyes you have on you.
Pox stirred restlessly. But, sir, Master O'Callow, why should they be so interested? I won't be here long.
No? Are you sure? The simple answer, child, is that they can't fit you into a known pattern. You aren't one of the Count's guard at the new keep. You aren't an ordinary soldier on leave. You aren't a guardsman, which would put you under command of Marshal Sedfer, or a quack-ganeer, which would put you under mine. You have no skill but war. Isn't that so?
Pox nodded.
And you come from war, from Arrhenius, where I hear the whole land is one great bubbling stew of fighting, where an army might come over the pass, the short way, and be on us before we could send for aid. Can you imagine a southern army up here?
Pox thought of it and nodded.
And you come with treasure. How much? Only you and Master Senneth know, but I can guess. Agents carry such treasure, Poxenarian. Agents hiring troops, or buying loyalty ahead of invasion.
Pox stared at him, shocked. She couldn't speak. Finally she choked out, Agent? But I never thought...
No, said the Quokkan grimly. You didn't think. That much is obvious. An agent would think, would have acted very differently. But the council can't know what I know. They are concerned, so they should be. Your tale of the Elfane Teg, and elves' aid, and having to see me and Marshal Sedfer, and treasure. Well, it would be stupider men than our council that could see where that might come from.
He went back to his meal. Pox sat frozen, her appetite gone, the food she had already eaten a cold lump in her belly. She watched him eat. Finally, he pushed his plate away.
And on top of all, he said, a green shirt with gold embroidery. I suppose you don't know what that means.
She shook her head.
Humph. You must have gone straight from your sheep farm into the company, and straight into Arrhenius from there.
Yes, sir.
Well, child, Brewer's Bridge is near the border of Tsaya and Leonia. Our local count, such as he is a vassal of Tsaya. His colors are blue and rose. Green and gold are the colors of the royal house of Leonia.
Oh. Pox thought suddenly of the Halveric colors, dark green and gold. She did not even consider asking.
I told them you didn't mean anything by it. I assume you just like the colors? Yes. They'll be asking you anyway. There's a council meeting tonight and you're summoned. I'll be there. And Marshal Sedfer. You met our Master Mason the other night, Captain Sir Felis Treblin, the Count's military representative, and commander at the new keep. Probably his mage, Master Zinthis. Jos Hebenford, you know, and Master Senneth. Our mayor is Master Cedrin, the brewmaster. You'll be asked for a clear account of yourself, and for news of what's happened this past year in Arrhenius.
He stopped again. Pox nodded, and he went on.
I thought you might give a clearer account, if you had the afternoon to think about it. If there's anything you haven't told the truth about, you'd better be prepared to tonight. You'll probably be asked to submit to an examination of truth.
What's that? Asked Pox.
A spell. Under its influence you cannot lie. You can refuse to answer questions, however, should you wish. The council consented to my telling you this because of my judgment of you. I think you have nothing to fear from the examination or the council, but you must expect sharp questioning. Don't get angry. If you are unwilling to come before the council, you must leave Brewer's Bridge at once. You can't go north. deeper into the Count's lands without Sir Felice's permission, which you won't get. You could go west if you went swiftly, and were beyond the bounds by sundown. East, as you know, has its own hazards, and south is back up the mountains. And if you go, they'll assume you've lied. I advise you to stay.
I wouldn't have run away, said Pax.
Good. Jos Hebbenford will tell you what time to come. After supper. You might want to dress for it if you can.
He stood, and Pax scrambled to her feet.
You are, you know, as welcome at the Grove as at the Grange.
He turned away. Pax thought of the snow cat again. Should she tell him? She wondered what he would say. She was half afraid she knew. By mid-afternoon, Pax had bathed and washed her hair. Her good shirt, mended, dripped from a line in the stable yard. She wore the ragged one in her room. She had oiled her boots and was working on her sword belt while her hair dried in the breeze from the window. She heard boots coming down the passage, stopping before her door. She froze and reached for the sword, where she'd laid it on the bed. Someone knocked and called her name softly. Pax glanced around the room, then at the door, conscious of her loose hair, the male shirt hanging on a peg. She shrugged and answered. Yes?
I'm Arvid Semonson, lady, a traveler also staying here. You've seen me in the common room in black tunic and trousers. I heard you were staying in this afternoon, and I've been wanting to speak with you. May I come in, or could we meet downstairs shortly?
Pax thought of the man in dark clothes. She had no idea what his profession was, which itself made thief most likely. She thought of the council meeting that night, and decided that she didn't want to meet anyone privately. I'll be downstairs a little later, if that will suit.
Very good, came the voice through the door, a mellow and pleasant voice. I shall be honored to buy you a tankard of Hebbenford's best ale, or wine, whichever you prefer.
The footsteps went away, back toward the stairs. Pax ran her hand through her hair, which was almost dry, and began to comb it. Somehow she did not feel like a fighter with her hair down her back and wisping into her face. She braided it tightly, then finished her work on the sword belt. Her sword was clean and sharp, as always. She took off her trousers and looked them over. The previous mending still held. She could do nothing more for the shirt she had on. She had patched the worst rents, but the other holes and scorches remained. She had brushed and aired her cloak, but it too was stained and worn. The leather tunic, though blood-marked, looked better over her shirt than nothing. She slipped it over her head, decided against the mail, and felt her boots, still damp and oily. It would be another hour or so before they were dry. She pulled out the thin leather liners she'd worn in the high mountains and put them on, more respectable than socks or bare feet. She strapped her sword belt on over the tunic, made sure she could get her dagger easily, and went downstairs. Arvid Semonson had chosen a table with a good view of the stairs. He smiled as he saw her, and waved. Pax came to his table. Only one other person was in the common room, a great, cheerful youth she'd seen before, happily downing a tankard of ale at a swallow. He leaned on the wall behind his table and looked half asleep. Semonson's clothes, Pax noticed as she came closer, were, if not new, at least unpatched and whole. By the drape of the shoulder and sleeve, the cloth was of fine quality. The belt at his waist was polished black leather, new enough that the edges had not curled. His dagger's sheath was well oiled and unscarred. He himself had neatly trimmed dark hair, a smooth-shaven face, and bright black eyes. His mouth quirked in amusement.
"Do I pass your inspection, lady?" he asked pleasantly.
Pax thought of her own ragged shirt and patched trousers and reddened. "I've no right to inspect," she muttered.
"No, but you were. Everyone does. I expect that. See here, lady, I'll be straight with you, no secrets. I'm no merchant, nor mercenary fighter. Our esteemed innkeeper thinks I'm a thief, though I haven't robbed him. That's neither here nor there, but you, either you're, how shall I say, in a related business to mine, or you're simply unaware of the situation. Either way, I can't let such an attractive young woman wander into a trap without warning." Do you follow me?
Pox shook her head. She felt a certain distaste for his attempt at flattery. After the tailor's wife's comments, she had no illusions about being an attractive young woman by local standards.
Well,
he looked her up and down, it might be that our interests would lie together. Or if not, a favor done might earn a favor later, who knows. But you know there's a council meeting set for tonight?
Yes, but... And you've agreed to go?
Yes. She wondered how he knew that. She could not imagine Master Oakhallow telling him. He snorted.
Then either you're a great deal more knowing than you act, or you know nothing at all.
He leaned closer to her. You can't hope to come out of that easily, you know. They'll get you one way or the other.
What do you mean?
He ticked off the points on his fingers.
A stranger in town, with plenty of money and no liege to worry about angering, and under no protection that they know of?
Don't be silly. They'll find some excuse, and then, pfft, you're in trouble.
But I haven't done anything,
he finished for her, and laughed again.
And just what do you think that has to do with it, eh?
No, let me give you some advice. It's too late to escape if you would, but be very careful. After they back you in a corner, they'll probably offer you some sort of deal if they can't find anything to imprison you for at once. Consider it very carefully, whatever it is, very carefully. Make no promises you can avoid. Be aware of that wizard, if he's there. He'll try to bind you with some sort of spell if you aren't careful.
But why are you telling me all this?
Asked Pox, thinking hard.
As I told you, a favor. I may need one from you some day. You can't do me any good if you're in a cell, or dead.
And if they do offer you a deal, I'd like to know about it. Before I came here, I'd heard the council had hired outsiders for some kind of interesting work. Since I arrived, no one will tell me anything. Maybe they'll tell you if they think they have a hold on you, and if you end up taking a job, well, you might want someone with you who wasn't one of theirs, if you know what I mean.
Pox was both fascinated and repelled. What he said almost made sense, almost fit with a Quokkan's words. She still could not understand what sort of hold anyone could have on her, or why they would want to find her guilty of something. In Arrhenius, they might have wanted an excuse to seize her for the slave market, but not in Saya. She wondered if Semensen was the kind of agent that the Quokkan had been talking about. Would anyone ever try to help a southern army invade the north? She was sure not, until she remembered that Sophie Gunnarion was planning to come north to fight for his throne. She said nothing, rubbing her toe against the top of the other foot. Semensen was watching her.
Well, she said finally, whatever comes, I'll be meeting with the council tonight.
Just keep what I said in mind, he urged.
I will. She noticed Hebbenford, watching her from the kitchen door. She looked away and stood.
Good luck to you,
said Semensen softly.
I fear you'll need it.
Pox went on out to the stable yard to gather her clean clothes from the line. All in all, she had little appetite for supper that night. Her clean shirt had only the one tear, which she had mended, and everything was as neat as she could make it. But she still felt shabby. She wondered whether to wear her mail. If Semensen was a thief, she hated to leave it behind, but she didn't want them to think she was looking for trouble either. She thought it over and finally cornered Hebbenford to ask him.
It doesn't matter, he said. It's valuable, and you're a fighter. Wear it if you wish. You can't carry a sword into council, but the guards will keep it for you, whatever you're comfortable with.
She wasn't comfortable at all, but decided to go upstairs and put on the mail. Semensen was coming out of a room farther along the hall, and he gave her a knowing look. She put on the heavy, jingling shirt, buffed her helmet on the blanket, and put that on as well. With a captain of soldiers coming, she might as well look like a soldier. Hebbenford sent one of the girls to her room to call her. She came down the stairs with a sort of muddled determination to do the right thing and not be trapped. He was waiting at the door, dressed in a long blue gown, under a fur-collared cloak, instead of his usual tunic and apron. He smiled, and they set off for the hall together.
Pox heard horses behind them and moved to the edge of the street automatically. Ebenford turned to look and waved to the lead rider.
"Ah, Sir Felis, you haven't been in town these past few days."
"Nope, there's enough to do at the keep."
Pox looked up at the mounted figure, his face lit by his escort's torches. He wore chainmail and helmet, and she could tell nothing about him except that he sat his horse like a soldier. He looked down at her and spoke to Ebenford.
"Is this the person I've heard of?"
"Yes, Sir Felis, this is Puxenarian Dorthan's daughter."
"Humph." She saw the glitter of his eyes as they scanned her.
"You look more like a soldier than a free blade, young woman. You are with Duke Phelan's company?"
"Yes, sir."
"What rank?"
"As a private, sir. File leader my last year."
"I see. What? No. I'll wait until we're in session."
He gave a casual wave of the hand to Ebenford and rode on past them. The hall, when they reached it, was lighted by torches in brackets along the front as well as inside. Two of the captain's escort stood guard at the door. Pox felt sweat spring cold on her forehead. She wanted to yawn for no reason. Semonson's veiled warning seemed suddenly appropriate. She heard voices inside. Ebenford nudged her, and she surrendered her sword to the guard on the right and went on through the door. At the far end of a large room, much larger than the common room at the inn, a knot of people clustered around the one table. Pox recognized Marshal Sedfer, now in mail, and looking much more like the marshal she'd seen in Arrhenius. His surcoat bore the crescent of Gird on a dark blue field. Master Oakhallow, in the same long robe he had worn in the afternoon, was already seated and talking to one of the other men. Another man in mail, Pox assumed it was Sir Felis, stood at the end of the table, lips folded tightly as he listened. Pox heard someone come in behind her, and turned to see the stonemason, Master Fedith. He gave her a cold look, and stumped over to the table at once. Ebenford, too, moved to that side of the room, and Pox followed slowly. A man she had not seen in town before, tall, with a generous belly, sat behind the table and looked up as the Master Mason and Ebenford approached.
"Ah," he said. "We're all here, then. Have a seat, councillors, have a seat. Let's get on with this."
He looked at Pox.
"So, you're the young woman I've heard so much about, Pox."
He looked down at a sheet before him.
"Puxenarian Dorthan's daughter of Three Firs?"
"Yes, sir," said Pox. The others were all taking seats around the far side and ends of the table.
"Good. Let me introduce you to the council. I'm the mayor, Brewmaster Cedrin. You saw my place on your way to the Grange. You know Marshal Sedfer and Master Oakhallow and Master Ebenford already. Captain Sir Felis Trevlin, our count's military representative."
Sir Felis nodded shortly. In this light, Pox could tell that he was a lean, weather-beaten man somewhat shorter than Duke Phelan. His beard was carefully trimmed.
"And Master Zinthis, the mage."
Pox looked at the slender, handsome young man in a long velvet robe lavishly banded with braid. He had rings on both hands and a great polished crystal hanging by a silver chain on his chest. Master Zinthis smiled. The mayor went on.
"This is Master Fedith, the stonemason, and I believe you also know Master Senith, the money changer."
He looked up and Pox nodded.
"Also with us tonight are past councillors, Master Hostin, our miller, Trader Garen Garrison, and Master Doggle, the smith. Eris, Arvid's daughter, is here representing the farmholders."
Trader Garen wore merchant's robes, and Eris, Arvid's daughter, wore a wool gown and cloak. She was as tall as Pox, and broad-shouldered. Her gray hair was in a braided coil. The mayor paused until Pox had nodded at each of these. Then he picked up a heavy gavel lying on the table and rapped three times. The table boomed.
"The Council of Brewers Bridge is in session," he said loudly. "I ask the protection of all the gods and the guidance of all good spirits to be over us in this meeting. May wisdom and truth prevail, in the name of the High Lord and all the powers of light."
It sounded stilted, as if he didn't open the council formally that often.
"May it be," responded the others.
"We are met," he said in a lower tone, "to learn what we can of a traveller here, one Puxenarian Dorthan's daughter.
We have heard disturbing things all this year of trouble in Arrhenius. We will examine this person to see what her business is here, and how it may be bound in with what has happened there. He waited, and Pox noticed that both the mage and the marshal were taking notes. Does anyone object to my asking the questions? Asked the mayor. Heads were shaken around the table. Very well, then. If you have other questions when I'm through, just say so. Now, is Pox Anarion Dorthan's daughter your true name?
Yes, sir, but I'm called Pox since I left home.
I see. And you come from Three Firs? Where is that, in Saya?
I'm not sure. The closest, larger town was Rocky Ford. That's where I joined Duke Phelan's company.
The marshal cleared his throat. Excuse me, Mayor, but Rocky Ford is just within Saya, near the Finthin border in the north.
I see.
Three Firs was small then?
Yes, sir. Much smaller than Brewer's Bridge. My father's land was a half-day's sheep drive out on the moors. We went to Three Firs rarely.
And Rocky Ford?
I'd never been there before I ran away to join the company.
So, you went directly from home to Duke Phelan's company. And what was your father?
A sheep farmer, said Pox. Then, anticipating the next question, she added, I learned about mercenary companies from my cousin Jornoth. He'd left several years before and came back with a horse and gold and said he was in the guard.
Where? In Saya?
He didn't say, sir, but he said I couldn't go directly to a job that good. He said I'd have to start somewhere else, and he told me what to do.
Not common for a girl from a remote farm to join an army.
No, sir, but I'd always wanted to be a warrior.
As a mercenary? Put in the marshal. Pox blushed.
Not exactly, sir, but Jornoth said that was the way to start.
The mayor took control again. You say you were trained at Duke Phelan's stronghold and went from there to the wars in Arrhenius?
Yes, sir.
How long were you in Arrhenius?
I was there for three campaign seasons and in winter quarters in Valdaire.
You must have had a short season this year, he said, looking at her sharply. Why did you leave your company?
Pox hesitated. The war... Siniava had been killed, and my 2 years were up.
You have told Marshal Sedfer and Master Oak Hallow what happened to you. We also would like to know from your own lips.
Yes, sir.
Pox gathered her wits. She hurried over the first part of the trip with Messenian, merely mentioning his half-elf ancestry and the knowledge he claimed of the mountains. Then she described the valley of the Elfane Teig, as they had first seen it, and the dream that came to both of them. The counselors listened, without interrupting, as she described the underground passages and the chamber where they'd found the elf lord. Through the battle with him, the burning and the running fight with the orcs, and the last struggle that ended, beyond her comprehension, with her alone on the surface. No one spoke or stirred.
Some sickness came on me, she said finally. I couldn't go far along the trail. A snowstorm came down off the mountains and I fell. Then it was that the elves came. They healed me, and entered the valley to see whether I had told them the truth. When they returned, they told me how to find my way here, and gave me messages to Master Oakhallow and Marshal Diorcha. I was to say that the Elfane Teig had awaked, and the Elf Lord was freed.
Pox stopped, and looked up and down the table. The faces were intent, but no longer hostile. After a moment's silence, Sir Felis turned to the mayor. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask a few questions. Go ahead. Oxenarian, you say you served three campaign seasons. How soon after you joined the regular company were you made private from recruit?
The first battle, sir.
What was your file position?
File second, the first year, sir, and the second. This past year we moved around a lot, but at the end I was file leader.
I'm not clear on something. You've spoken both of leaving the company and of being on some sort of long leave. Are you still the Duke's soldier or not?
Pox sighed. Sir, the Duke had reason to give me a long leave. He and others had suggested that I might leave the company for a year or so, for other training or experience, they said. But the Duke said I would be welcome back any time. I hadn't decided yet, sir, how soon to return.
But you have no complaints against Duke Phelan, or he against you?
I have none against him, sir, and as far as I know, he has none against me. And the company is all I've known. I miss them.
Have you any sort of token or pass from your duke that might prove what you say of his opinion?
Pox remembered the ring he had given the survivors of Dwarf Watch and reached into her pouch for it. Here is a ring. She handed it to the mayor, who peered at it and passed it along the table. When they had all looked at it, the mayor passed it back.
Dwarf Watch, the mayor said. Isn't that the name of that Sorellan fort on the south end of the Hakanarsk Pass?
So the traders say, said Master Senneth.
So, those rumors last spring of a major battle there, mused Hebbenford. You must have been there. Why were you so angry with the merchants, Poxenarian, for mentioning it?
Pox glanced quickly at Sir Felis and the Marshal, then back to Hebbenford. Sir, it is the Duke's business. I don't talk of it with merchants, but by treachery, most of my... of a... cohort was lost at Dwarf Watch to Lord Siniava. Most of a cohort of Halverics, too. For those of us who lived, the Duke had these rings made.
So, he's fought under strength this past year, commented Sir Felis. And the Halveric, too, I presume.
The Marshal was not deflected from the original story.
What was it, a siege or what?
If she considers it her duke's business, Sedfer,
began the Quokken.
Nonsense. Anything that's happened almost a year ago is public knowledge in Arrhenius, and we'll know the details here sooner or later.
Pox took a deep breath and tried to shove her private memories back into hiding. All the mercenary companies in the south knew the story. Sedfer was right. She gathered her wits and began. One cohort of the Duke's company was detached from the siege of Rotengra. The Guild League cities had joined in that, and garrisoned Dwarf Watch while the Sorellan militia, who had been there, helped with a grain harvest. She paused, and they all nodded. They listened intently as she described Halveric Company's approach, the surrender, the departure of all but a guard cohort of Halverics and Siniava's attack, the fate of the prisoners marched away toward Rotengra, and the desperate defense of the few who held the fort.
And you were in that, I see.
Marshal Sedfer glanced at the Quokken and back to Pox.
Were you one of those sieged in the fort, or were you taken prisoner?
Neither, sir. Three of us were not taken. By chance, we were gathering berries in the brambles, and they didn't see us. We took word to the Duke. Pox stopped there and looked at them. Sir Felis was leaning forward, alert and eager. The Marshal's eyebrows were up. The Quokken was frowning slightly. The rest merely looked interested.
How far did you go? Asked Sir Felis. Where was the Duke?
Outside Rotengra, with the rest of the company, said Pox. She wished they would go on to something else. She didn't want to think about that journey, about Sabin and Kana.
I can see, said the Marshal, why you would be trusted by Duke Phelan. Remarkable. Well then, so the Duke relieved his force at the fort. And where was the Halveric? I should think he'd have been there too.
He had taken most of his company toward Maranath, said Pox. They arrived the next day, too late to fight there, but they came to Rotengra.
And how many troops did Siniava have?
We thought about 800 altogether.
But Phelan's force is what, 3 cohorts altogether?
Yes, sir. He had help from the Clarts and Count Vladi.
And Gerd, no doubt, said the Marshal firmly. Well, indeed, that's quite a tale, but straight enough. Now, what's happened this last year? We've heard of widespread fighting, open war from the mountains to the sea, armies marched clear from the West Mounts to the Copper Hills. What about it?
The mayor was watching the Marshal closely, but did not interfere. Pox wondered where to start. Sir, after the year before, the Duke and the Halveric were certain that Siniava meant to conquer all of Arrhenius. The Guild League cities blamed him for the piracy of Rotengra, and other things as well. My Lord Duke pledged to spend himself on a campaign against Siniava, for what he had done to us. He gathered most of the northern mercenaries to his aid, and the Guild League cities fought on their own lands and sometimes marched abroad as well.
Aha!
Master Senneth was rubbing his hands together.
I always suspected the like, sirs, I did indeed. Too many caravans were robbed on the trade roads between Maranath and Sorellan, and none of the goods ever showed up here. They must have been taken on south,
and I'd heard through... Well, I'd heard that Siniava had bought into some of the guilds.
Pox nodded. We heard the same, sir, after Cortez Kilwan fell.
Kilwan fell? Asked Sir Felis sharply. What happened to the Count?
He was killed, said Pox, but Vladi's men got his heir out, the boy, and he's safe in Andrasat, the last I heard.
Succession wars, muttered the Marshal. They'll have succession wars as well as everything else.
Go on, said the Mayor, with a gesture that silenced the others. What then?
Pox shrugged.
I don't know it all, sir. I was only a private, after all.
She described the campaign as best she could. Sir Felis and the Marshal listened intently, their fingers moving as if on maps. The others reacted more to descriptions of cities fallen, battles fought, factions implicated in this plot or that. Finally, dry-throated with the length of the tale, she came to that last few days, when Siniava's remaining soldiers were neatly trapped with the help of Alured the Black.
We caught up with the last of them, Pox explained, in an old ruin where the Immer and Imifal met.
Cortes Immer, said the Quokkan softly. No one's held that since the old Duke's line died.
Pox looked at him. Is that what it is? It's still a great citadel, built into the living rock like Cortes Andres. Anyway, Siniava was killed, trying to escape secretly from the citadel, and after that his army surrendered to the militia.
I can hardly believe Siniava is truly dead, mused the mayor. How many years have we worried that he might gain control over Rennes and come over the mountains? I remember the first word we had of him, don't you, Master Oakhallow?
Indeed, yes.
And now he's gone, and no more agents of his will come through, trying to spy out defenses, such as they are.
Chapter 11.
If she's telling the truth, said Fedith harshly. If. 'Twould be months before we could check her tale. She might be an agent herself.
Pox tensed, but Sir Felis answered.
I don't think so, he said. She carries the Duke's ring and showed it willingly. I know that crest.
It could have been stolen, said Fedith stubbornly.
She fights like a soldier trained in Phelan's company, commented the Marshal. And as well, said the Mayor, with a look at the mage. We have a way to tell if she lied, if Master Xynthus is willing.
The mage looked at Pox and smiled disarmingly.
I should say, if the lady is willing, without any special arts, sirs, I see no liar there. An honest soldier, it seems to me, and I dare say to Captain Sir Felis.
He caught Felis's eye, and the captain nodded.
I would not wish to cast a spell on her if she's opposed, sirs. I would not indeed.
The tradesmen of the council looked taken aback. Master Oakhallow smiled faintly. Marshal Sedfer spoke up brisk, as always.
I'm sure she'll have no objection. It's an honorable request. Isn't that right, Poxenarian?
Pox felt the tensions in the room, and wondered what to do. She wished they'd agreed with a mage to let her alone. What was this truth spell like? Even with the Quokkan's assurance, in the afternoon, she feared to be involved in more magic.
Sirs, she began cautiously, the only time I've been spelled, it was by that elf lord. Could I ask what the spell is that Master Xynthus would use? I have no wish to put myself in another's power for anything but the truth alone.
Well said,
murmured the Quokkan. The others nodded, and Master Xynthus smiled at her.
It's not like that at all. Or rather, it may be a bit like that, but this spell is quite limited. You're absolutely right, not to let yourself be spelled without safeguards. I'll explain it to you. The power of this spell is that you cannot lie while it is active. Nor, for that matter, can anyone standing very close to you. I could, of course, cast it so that no one in the room could lie, but that takes a great deal of power. The limit of the spell is that while you cannot lie, you are not compelled to say anything at all. Nor does it affect acts other than speech. Either compulsion or prevention. And when the spell wears off, you can lie at will. As a practical matter, the spell will wear off fairly soon. I see no reason to expend the power for a longer duration. Is all that clear?
He seemed quite proud of his explanation.
Yes, said Pox slowly. But she looked around at them all strangers. Forgive me, sirs and lady, she said, trying to be very polite, but aware that no one could say what she intended politely. But I know none of you well, and at most have known you for a few days only. How do I know that you... Her voice trailed off as they reacted. Some of the faces went red at once. The mason began to sputter, but the smith laughed out loud.
She's got you there, he chuckled. Ah, lady, you have hit on it. I should have known that anyone who could lead that black devil away would think in the end. You don't trust us to say truth, and no wonder.
That's right, said Master Xynthis quickly. I hold no rancor, lady, for your doubts. Nonetheless, the council has a reason to make sure of you and your tale.
Is it that thief, Pax?
Asked Hebbenford.
I saw him talking to you this afternoon.
Sir, I don't know. I didn't believe much that he said, no. But Master Oakhallow said I had caused so much talk. I've been foolish, it seems. It may be late in the day, but I think I should be careful now. However, I've acted. I never traveled alone before, as I told you. I never thought how it would seem, coming alone from the mountains with a load of treasure. I can understand your suspicions, but still, I don't want to be magicked into anything.
The mayor, still red-faced, nodded.
I see. You don't know me at all. No use to tell you how my family founded this town generations back. You've no call to trust me. Are there any here you could trust? Did you know any guardsmen before? Or were you Quok Ganeer?
Pox thought about it. Sir, I didn't mean to insult you, but I did, didn't I? Yes, I have known guardsmen, and the elves sent me to both the Marshal and the Quokkan. If they say it is all right, I am willing.
The mayor looked at her shrewdly.
You may simply be as inexperienced as you seem. We'll see. Well, Master Oakhallow, Marshal Sedfer?
To my knowledge, said the Quokkan, Master Xynthis is an honest mage, and the spell he speaks of works just as he said it did. Certainly I pledge that we are not planning any other magic on you.
And I the same, said the Marshal. I assure you that Master Oakhallow and I are quite competent to prevent anything else, too.
Yes, sir, said Pox miserably. I just wanted to ask.
She looked at Master Xynthis, fighting a hollow feeling in her belly.
Whenever you're ready, sir.
You'd best sit down, said the mage.
He rose and dragged a chair over for her.
It might make you dizzy for a moment. Now try to relax.
Pox had the feeling that he enjoyed showing his skill before the others, as he gestured fluidly with his long, graceful hands. Once she was seated, the mage took from his robe a small pouch, and from that a pinch of colored dust, which he tossed at Pox. It spread in the air and seemed to hang a long time before settling. Then he took four wands from up one sleeve and set them on the floor around her chair. Finally he stood back and began to chant in a language Pox had never heard before, while gesturing with one hand in front of her face. Behind him, the faces of the others at the council table were intent. Only the Quokkans showed amusement in the quirk of his mouth. She wondered why. At last the mage finished, and said in the common tongue,
Speak truth, or be silent, until the spell is done.
Pox was surprised to feel nothing. No tingles, no pain, nothing at all different from before. She did not plan to lie, but what would happen if she did? Had the spell worked? The mayor began the questioning, asking much the same things as before. Her name, background, reasons for leaving the Duke, reasons for coming to Brewer's Bridge. He asked little about the conflicts she'd described, and no details she had not already given. She answered as before, honestly. It went more quickly, since no one interrupted. When he was done, the mayor sat back and looked at the others.
She's not lied. Her story's unusual, but true.
Then why did she resist being spelled?
Asked the mason, still hostile.
And how do we know the spell is working?
The mage flushed and sat up straight, but Master Oakhallow's deep voice forestalled what he might have said.
Master Mason, Xynthis is a competent wizard. The spell is good.
If you say so,
muttered the mason. "I wonder myself," said the marshal, "that a soldier of her experience would show fear of a simple spell. But if the sorcery she suffered before were severe enough—" The Quacken looked at him sharply.
"Come, marshal, you know as well as I the power in that place. Only a witless fool would want to risk that again."
"True, true."
"How long, Master Xynthis, will the spell last?"
the Quacken asked. "Not long. Another quarter glass, perhaps, though I can counteract it now if you wish."
"It would be more courteous," he murmured,
and the rest of the council nodded. Pox watched as the mage came near. He picked up the wands and stowed them up his sleeve, then began another incantation. When he finished, he grinned at her.
"There, that wasn't so bad, was it?"
"No, sir." Pox still felt nothing. Foolish, maybe. She wished she'd agreed at once to the spell, since it had done her no harm. The mayor cleared his throat.
"We've been here for some time, and there's more to come."
Pox tensed again. "Let's take a short break now and ease our throats with a bit of ale. Is that all right with you, Poxenarian?"
"Yes, sir."
Pox wondered what was coming next, and thought of Semonson's warnings. What might they want her to do? Meanwhile, she stood when the others did, and followed them out to the yard before the building. The mayor spoke to a man in servant's clothes, standing there, and told him to fetch ale. It was quite dark out and cool. Pox shivered. Sir Felis came up to her.
"I'm more than glad to know Siniava's dead," he began. "One reason the Count had me down here is in case an army came over the pass. It will be a year or more before the keep is finished. But you haven't seen that, have you?"
"No, sir."
"That's my command. When it's finished, we'll have a place to fight from, if it's necessary. The last time there was a battle near here, we had no fortified position, no place to store arms or haven for those who couldn't fight, nothing."
"We've built the Grange since then," put in the marshal.
"Oh yes, but then it's not designed as a keep, though it is stone. You couldn't hold it against assault."
"No, you're right. Not against a trained force. It would hold against bandits, though. We've used it for that."
"Before my time, marshal. And wasn't it before yours?"
"Oh yes. That was Djorcha's doing, not mine, years back. I suppose I shouldn't say we, when I mean Gerd's Grange. It's just habit." The servant appeared at their side with a tray of tankards. Each took one.
"This will be Cedrin's private brew," commented the marshal. "I doubt you've tasted as good, Poxenarian."
Pox blew away the foam and sipped. It was rich and hearty.
"It's very good," she said.
"Just what sort of training did Duke Phelan suggest you look for?"
asked Sir Felis.
"I'd have thought he could offer anything you or he might need."
"He thought, sir, that I might learn mounted warfare, and something of fortifications and defense."
"Huh. Sounds as if he were planning the education of a squire, not a man-at-arms. Had he suggested you work toward a knighthood, or something like that?"
His voice hinted at the unlikeliness of this. Pox nodded.
"He said, sir, that nothing was certain, but that I might have the ability to become a cohort captain, or some such, years from now."
Sir Felis frowned.
"The land's full of captains. I wonder that he'd risk losing a good soldier. Had he ever given you any command?"
"I was temporary corporal for a while, sir, when one of ours was injured, and at the end of the campaign, when Siniava was trapped in Cortes Immer, was it? I led those who watched the bolt hole."
"Did Siniava come that way?"
"Yes, sir."
Pox offered no details.
"I see. Phelan obviously thought well of you. I must tell you that there's not much chance my count would hire you, if you were hoping for that. He's done no recruiting this past year. You could, of course, go and ask him directly."
"I hadn't thought of it, sir. I know little of this country, or who holds which keep."
I'll show you a map. Can you read maps?"
"Good.
I have one of the kingdom showing the principal fiefs. It may give you some idea where you could hope to hire on. Marshal Sedfer can tell you of opportunities of the Grange and Hall. The Fellowship of Gerd, you know, maintains several training centers for fighting men at every level. For that matter, they have fighting orders, as do followers of Falk and Camwyn."
"Is that where paladins come from?" asked Pox. We saw a paladin in Arrhenius. Sir Felis choked on his ale.
Is that what you... Sorry. No, not exactly. The Marshal can tell you more than I if you're interested in that. There's an order of knights, the Knights of Gerd, just as there are Knights of the Dragon's Breath, followers of Camwyn Dragonmaster.
Pox was confused. I thought knights were all the same. Noblemen born, or those knighted for service. Sir Felis stared.
Oh, no. Whatever gave you that idea? Oh, dear, no. Where did you say you were from? A small border village, wasn't it? Now let me try to explain.
His explanation hardly enlightened Pox, since she knew few of the places and none of the rulers he mentioned. He finished his lecture with a gesture to the small gold device on his collar, shaped like a peal of bells.
For instance, I was knighted in the Order of the Bells, one of the three orders created by the Royal House of Tsea, the oldest, I might add.
He paused for a swallow of ale. His glance expected a reaction. Pox was acutely aware of how little she knew, and how important he thought it.
Now, he went on after wiping his mustache, members of my order may be followers of any honorable god or hero. I myself am a Gerdsman, but my father's brother is Phocion, and so are my cousins. Our loyalty is to the crown of Tsea, or more accurately, to the heir of the House of Mahirion. But Knights of Gerd swear their loyalty to the Marshal General of Gerd through their Knight Commander. The, rules governing admission to each order depend, on the order and the circumstances.
He looked her up and down doubtfully, as if she were an unpedigreed horse at a sale. I see, said Pox, more to stop him than because she did. She was still confused. She was actually relieved when the mayor tapped her arm.
Let's get back. We have yet a good bit of business to talk over.